Hey everyone, and welcome to this week's show. I'm your host, Lisa Anderson. Letting you know, first of all, that we are kicking off a contest. It is called Rock Your Job. We want to know, those of you that are working, what do you actually do? Do you have a job? Is it super cool? Is it kind of like cubicle land? I think we've all been there, done that when it comes to the wide range of different things we can do in our careers. So we want you to take a picture of yourself, selfie time, and put it on our Facebook page, our Twitter feed, our Instagram feed, and hashtag it Rock Your Job. We're going to give one person a party in a box. That's going to be for them and five friends. It includes a movie, snacks, music, different things that you can do, possibly when you're not on the job. I don't know if that would work like when you're actually in your office or whatever. So, but you're going to gather some friends and be able to do that. And quite frankly, folks, to take a picture of yourself and post it, this is a super easy, like easiest contest ever. So we want to see where you all are during the workday or night. So go ahead and send those in. Later on in the show, we have got Carl Benzio. He is a psychiatrist answering a question about pot. If you are living in a community or in an apartment complex or whatever where they call themselves pot friendly or 420 friendly, how do you go ahead and deal with that as a believer and someone who maybe doesn't like to get high? And then for our culture segment, we have HR expert Jackie Kintz in the studio to give us some advice on what employers look for. So if you want that inside scoop on how to do a resume well, how to interview well, how to kind of set yourself apart from the other candidates, then she will certainly fill you in on that. And here we are for our roundtable where, wow, this is a weirdo, like disparate week. We're going to talk about the Sabbath in our roundtable. So when you're not rocking your job, how are you observing the Sabbath? Because I would like to point out that in Genesis, we are told that God rested on the seventh day. He worked hard for six and then rested and encourages us to do likewise. So that is Genesis 2, 2, and 3. And then, of course, in Exodus 20, we have remember the Sabbath and keep it holy. So this is like in the Bible, people. So why aren't we doing it? So we're going to talk about that today. So I want to invite Thomas and Sarah Beth and Kevin to the conversation. Hey, y'all.
What up? How are you doing?
Great to have you here. And today is a work day, so we are all working. It is not our Sabbath, but we're going to talk about this.
Unfortunately.
Yeah, exactly.
I didn't know I was supposed to be working today, actually. So.
Oh, right. Yeah. Well, here we are. Okay, so I want to ask you guys, when you think of the Sabbath, we know, like I just said, that it is in the Bible. We are called to rest. We are called, in fact, both passages that I talked about refer to the Sabbath as holy or set apart. So somehow this thing is supposed to look different than what we're doing every other day of the week. So I want to know, as we kick this off, growing up, what did your Sabbath look like? Did you have kind of something that was dictated by your parents? Did you have something you kind of fell into? What did your Sabbath look like? And what is your biblical understanding of the Sabbath? Like that, you know, if you had to craft your ideal or kind of what you grew up assuming it was.
Well, I will say Sabbath was definitely not a day of rest for my parents on days we went to church. I have two brothers, and we were a treat to get in the car in the morning.
I'm
pretty confident.
So they were already exhausted by the time you made it out the door.
Yeah, so, you know, they're the ones that slept through church, and we took notes for them. So that worked out well, I think.
You know what? Maybe if you were better behaved, they wouldn't have that problem.
You know what? It's not important to the conversation, actually. So. Okay. So, no, we went to church every Sunday. It's what you did. I didn't really know it as, like, Sabbath or a day of rest. I knew it as, crud, I have to do that thing really early in the morning on Sunday with my family, and I'm 10 and don't want to.
Yeah.
But I'm thankful they did. And so nowadays, it's a little different because, you know, anybody who volunteers at church may see that as, am I really being restful or am I really observing the Sabbath? And so that's something I've wrestled with of, you know, being on the worship team and technically working 8 hours at church. Am I really being restful or observing the Sabbath? But on days that I'm not singing, then I'm normally out hiking or, you know, fishing or doing something where I can just kind of rest my mind, so to speak.
Okay.
We did the church thing too, but then depending on if it was football season or not, we would either go home and watch the Steelers play or we would go on a family hike. And so we do the same thing now that I'm an adult. I go to church with my parents who live right up the road, and then we gather together to watch football all day or go on a family hike. Still, it's just continued on.
Do you still watch the Steelers?
Absolutely. Black and gold always.
Wow.
Uh-huh. That's unfortunate.
When they're not getting into brawls, whatever.
That would be honest. Those pig ravens.
Uh-huh. I thought it came from both sides. Okay.
Well, I remember growing up, we went to church, of course, and back then it seems most churches had a Sunday night service as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was a lot of the day. And I remember, of course, my dad didn't work that day, so that was different. And we usually didn't have dinner. We had like a snack and a big lunch. So
oh, yeah.
I thought, mm-hmm. Well, that's different.
yeah, it is.
And it was a little bit more of a fun, laid-back day, but that's really all I remember about it being different. But now that I know a little more about what the Sabbath should be, my wife and I try to, you know, get all the stuff we need to get done on the weekend on Saturday so we can relax or do something restful. And for me, sometimes that is actually something productive, but it's relaxing to me. So
yeah,
if sometimes I enjoy fixing things or working on the car, and that's something that does need to get done, but it's still relaxing and helps me re-energize. So
yeah, interesting. I grew up very much in a house where Sunday was Sunday, and we kind of had probably a few what would be interpreted now as kind of legalistic practices. We didn't shop on Sunday. Mm-hmm. We didn't, you know, we did go to church, and then for a while we were helping out with the Filipino church in the afternoon, so we would go to that one and then be back at our church for the evening service, like you were talking about, Kevin. Mm-hmm. I grew up in the era of Sunday pot roasts and all of that kind of stuff, which is a great memory to have. And to have that day set apart, even though I felt like it was kind of exhausting. Then as I entered junior high and high school, I did have to sneak in some homework for sure. So I felt a little guilty about that. But okay, well, Kevin can't even get away from work. His phone is falling. Just turn it off. Okay, so, but here I want to read, we have had here at Boundless David Lomas on the program. He's the author of The Truest Thing About You. We talked about identity, and he has a section here on Sabbath. And I think this is an interesting perspective. He says, Sabbath reminds us that we are loved for who we are, not for what we can produce. Sabbath is the real life practice of finding our identity in Christ, not in what we do or in what we have. It's all too easy for us to allow work to determine our identity. Most of us spend the largest single chunk of our lives working, more than being with friends, more than sleeping, more than pursuing our favorite hobbies. It's no wonder we can get our relationship with work so wrong. It's constantly demanding our time and attention. So then he goes on to say, so here's what Sabbath is and what it means. Work in our society is about production and achievement. Sabbath is about not producing. Sabbath is about not achieving anything. In the words of Eugene Peterson, Sabbath is about shutting up and showing up. We kill our own agendas and we show up before God. We lay before him our week behind and our week ahead. We stop laboring for money, for meaning, for purpose, for image management, for relationship management. Instead, we simply rest. I would say I probably don't do that. And he goes on to actually say that what Sabbath is it's not a day off. I see it as my day off where I'm just going to like check out, or else I'm going to do all the things that I couldn't do the rest of the weekend or the week. I'm going to run my errands. I'm going to, you know, and he says, well, that's just utilitarian. That's kind of moving into how are you going to catch up from your week and how are you going to. So, I mean, I don't know. What do you guys think? I mean, if you crafted a Sabbath for you that you felt was biblical or something that would be, you know, changes that you should make with the way you're currently observing it, what would you do differently? And if you're on a worship team and you have to sing all day, like, how do you fit this in? Yeah. Is that not your Sabbath then? Or how?
I mean, that's essentially the internal struggle of volunteering at church, right? Do you do everything on Sunday since Sunday you're worshiping on the worship team, which, you know, that's the irony in observing the Sabbath of like, I'm working all day worshiping the Lord.
Yeah.
Okay, well, is that really work, or are you truly then the epitome of setting the day apart for him? So, I mean, yeah, that's the internal struggle always of, okay, well, then I'll just do nothing on Saturday. But if you're an extrovert, you know, like me, I don't know if you guys knew that out there, then being around people is extremely restful for me and re-energizes me, and being a community. Now, if you're an introvert, it's probably very different, right? And so I think that's the whole idea of, again, going back to identity, of finding your identity in the Lord and what does that look like and how do you draw closer to him. resting your soul, not just your body, mm-hmm. right? And that's been important for me. So if I had to do things differently, you know, the last few months actually have been extremely intentional in doing things that re-energize me, like going out and fishing with friends or going hiking or spending time with some families up here that have kind of taken me under their wing. For me, that's extremely restful and draws me closer to the Lord. But that's me. I wouldn't necessarily say it would be, you know, for Sarah Beth or mm-hmm. for Kevin. So mm-hmm.
for me, Sunday is such a big family day, whether that's my family of origin or the family of friends that I've kind of created around me. And so that's the day where we intentionally kind of reconnect and talk about our week ahead or the week that we just finished and what's new and what's happening and what we're looking forward to. And so for me, that's really great, as I think putting that family kind of first on a day that you're supposed to be restful, because it's the people who you hold closest to you. And I love that time that we get together.
I wouldn't claim to be an expert or know that much, but you know, I do know that it's supposed to be holy, and that means to be set apart, so it should look different than all the other days. Mm-hmm. And it should be a day of rest. But I don't know that a blanket statement of saying you should not do anything productive mm-hmm. is, I don't know if I would agree with that, yeah. because like I said, there might be something that I do that I really enjoy doing. And since I do have a job in an office, maybe I don't get to work on the yard, especially now because it's dark when I get home. mm-hmm. And maybe that's something that energizes me or is, you know, restful. And especially if, you know, you get the whole family doing it, that can be a really different thing and mm-hmm. restful. And yet it is still productive, but mm-hmm. it's not, you know, so I don't know if I would agree with that statement, but
yeah.
Again, I'm not the expert.
That's a good point, because, you know, I'm a photographer as well. And, you know, a lot of times when I'm out hiking and stuff, I'm producing photos or, you mm-hmm. know, Kevin doing a film or something. Mm-hmm. I mean, so for an artist, you know, finding rest is doing art. And so, but that's still doing something. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I think you're right on that.
I think it's been interesting for me to kind of interpret the whole setting apart the day. And it used to be very easy for me to procrastinate and just leave everything I had to get done until Sunday, because I would be out having fun on Saturday. And then I'm like, ah, I got to go to the grocery store. Ah, I got to get this. But for me, setting apart Sunday has been to protect that time from the stuff I have to do. Mm-hmm. And then it frees me up, because what I would find myself doing is there would be some great opportunity at church on Sunday or something, an opportunity to go and do some visitation or do whatever. And now I can give my time to that and make it a different kind of day, because I'm not saying, oh, I have to do all this stuff. So that's been kind mm-hmm. of interesting. But let's take Sunday and the whole idea of the Sabbath apart. What mm-hmm. do you guys think of that idea of identity and the whole how we are the rest of the week so much focused on what we can produce, in kind of whether it's excelling in our jobs or working for towards a promotion or showing right. that we are actually learning something or doing something new or meeting new people or whatever. How do you not do that on a Sabbath, yeah. for example?
No, that's fascinating. I always think about this. So I come from a long line of dairy farmers. So you're welcome. But
do they have dairy farmers in Oklahoma?
Oh yeah,
I did not know that.
Like all over the place.
I thought it was just like cowboys.
That too.
Okay.
Who milks the cows?
Oh, okay. True. cowboys just wrote poetry and rode
around.
It's
fine.
Okay.
Right off into sunsets with their fresh cup of milk.
Exactly.
No. So looking back at like where last names came from in America, right? Like blacksmith, carpenter. These are people's trades, and so who they were was, you're born and you take the apprenticeship underneath your father or your grandfather, your uncle, and you don't have to worry about that. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, it's just, okay, yeah, I'm a carpenter. Mm-hmm. What does that mean about who I am? It almost, in a very backwards way of thinking, it's kind of freeing of mm-hmm. the thing. I don't have to worry about my career. It's not how I identify myself. It's just what we do. It's our craft. Mm-hmm. It identifies our family by what we do, not who I am mm-hmm. as a person. And so I almost kind of like the idea of going back to those days of, I don't have to worry about my craft, because then people aren't going to worry about, oh, he's a blacksmith. Okay, but who are you? What do you do? You know, mm-hmm. it takes that off the table. Mm-hmm. But moving forward now, yeah, it's very difficult to find your worth of who you are and who God sees you to be and finding your identity in him. Mm-hmm. What does that look like? Because we do spend so much time, especially and the work all of us do mm-hmm. with digital or media, mm-hmm. It's on you 24/7. So how do you break away from it?
Right. So. We don't leave our workplace anymore. We mm-mm. tend to bring it with us.
And right.
I know you in the digital space. I mean, don't you feel like on the Sabbath, if you're not tweeting something on the Sabbath, aren't people like, what's Thomas doing? How come he's not saying
okay,
anything?
Well, I mean, you can plan it beforehand, but you
schedule your Sabbath.
You can schedule out, right? If the pastor says something really cool, I want to share that with people. But I mean, is that work or is that evangelism in the digital space? You know, so mm-hmm. then you start have to weighing the, again, mm-hmm. it comes back down to that definition of what Kevin was talking about, like what is producing, what is work, what does it truly mean to set aside the day? Mm-hmm. Does that mean that habits that you carry into the workforce go away? Not necessarily. You know, that's the whole thing of mm-hmm. letting life dictate your work, not letting work dictate your life. Mm-hmm. So if I tweet and I Facebook and that's just who I am, then mm-hmm. Just because I do that for work doesn't necessarily mean I see it as work whenever I'm doing it outside of the mm-hmm. office.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. So do you guys feel, if we think of Sabbath, I mean, do you feel like this is something, I know we've kind of said we don't feel like we do it perfectly, but do you feel like you're actually getting a pause during the week? Like there is that rest, or are you kind of in the American cycle of frantic life where you wonder how you can live in only 7 days a week? And if so, how would you see a Sabbath changing that?
Mine goes back and forth. I travel a lot on the weekends, so I'll be gone Thursday to Sunday or Thursday to Monday. And so when I'm traveling, it's more difficult to kind of really take that as a restful time. So in a perfect world, I would not be traveling on the weekends. I would be with all of the people that I love so that we would all be in one place. Mm-hmm. And we could really intentionally set that time apart. But that's not the way it is. And so when you are traveling a lot on the weekends, you still are trying to do things mm-hmm. on Sunday, whatever that looks like. Most of the time for me, that does involve hiking and exploring our national parks and getting out to see God's beauty, which I think is a different way of reflection. Mm-hmm. On the Sabbath, you're getting to appreciate why he took a rest on the seventh day. You're getting to appreciate what he created in the first six. Mm-hmm. But so for me, a perfect Sabbath would be not traveling and not having that kind of split of, okay, I'm here with this person and present and enjoying the time, mm-hmm. but I'm thinking about the people that are back at work or back in Colorado and what does that look like and what am I missing out on, that kind of thing.
Okay.
We are definitely very intentional about trying to rest and set apart Sundays, usually Sundays, sometimes we'll say, well, this Saturday should be our Sabbath mm-hmm. because we have something going on that we can't avoid. But we have two kids under two, and so we're exhausted and busy. So that doesn't always happen as well as we want it to, but, you know, that would be perfect. Although another interesting thing I remember as I was a little bit older of a kid, you know, maybe there was some chore or something I had to do on Sunday, and I would say to my dad or whatever, you know, this is a day of rest. I shouldn't have to do this today. And
can you use it back on him later on in life?
Like, well, yeah. But then he brought up a good argument and said, well, God rested on the seventh day because he was done. Like he had created everything. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you're not done with all your work, so you have to do it. I think that's interesting. I don't know how that affects us because we're not perfect. We're not God, and we don't, you know, finish all of our tasks all the time. So is it, maybe it's, I don't know. Maybe it depends on the situation.
Cool.
I don't know.
Well, good thoughts, you guys. Way to get the discussion started. Of course, we want all y'all to continue it on the blog. Let us know what you have learned about the Sabbath, what it looks like for you to rest. I think also just highlighting Dave Lomas's point about relationship management. I think a lot of us extroverts especially can get very feeling very obligatory towards, I need to be with people all the time. I need to sign up for this potluck. I need to go over to these people's house. I mean, I've had Sundays where I go to like hit like four different events and I'm like, that wasn't restful, even for someone who is extroverted. So things to keep in mind. So thank you guys so much for weighing in on this one.
Yeah, thanks for having
thank
me.
Thank you.
I see your fingerprints, the work of your hands. It's all in your hands. I see the end. chance. The world's in your hands. So rest in your promises. Now I am sure of this. I'm yours.
Well, hey everyone, here we are for this week's culture segment, and we thought it would be fun. You know that here at The Boundless Show, we talk about all kinds of things pertaining to relationships, life, and faith, and we're going to land on life today in this segment, specifically career and the workplace. And so I'm very privileged to have Jackie Kintz in the studio. Hey, Jackie.
Hi, Lisa. It's great to be here.
Good to be here. You have heard Jackie on the show before. She is one of our I'm just going to say like chief HR slash recruiting people here at Focus on the Family. Do you have like an official title? Because sometimes I don't use them.
I think I do. I'm actually a director of recruiting and volunteers.
Oh, see, she's a director. She just directs people to do that kind of stuff.
Point, go here, go there.
And that's volunteer. Great. So if you know, if she doesn't want to pay you, she's just like, you know what? Maybe you should just volunteer.
Right. Or if we have great conferences on site, that's a great opportunity to come
we
volunteer.
We do. The best one being Pursuit.
Absolutely.
Which happened last summer. Woo woo, and it's happening again this coming summer. Whoa, big time. Okay, so you're going to help us navigate. We're talking about a little bit. I think we have a lot of people in our audience in the workforce or not in the workforce who either feel that they are underemployed or they, you know, are frustrated with being unemployed. A lot of young adults feel they have this vision for where they would be and what they'd be doing, and they're not there. and some of it comes down to education, but some of it just flat out comes down to strategy in job hunting and interviewing and getting yourself out there. You know, I am not super old, but I do remember the era when I was like, I remember being in high school and college and looking for jobs, and you pulled out like classified ads, and then it was like the internet came and you started looking online. And now, I mean, you can like tweet for jobs and you can put stuff on Facebook and LinkedIn and stuff. So Jackie, we are looking forward to you kind of weighing in here as we just kind of casually have this conversation about the employment scene and what it looks like. So the first thing I want to bring up to you is when we're talking to a largely millennial audience, I have been blazed away recently in hearing about young adults who are coming out of college either with a degree or an advanced degree and are still finding it difficult to find work. So we've seen research recently here at The Boundless Show where there are just quite frankly not enough jobs or enough professional jobs for this demographic. And we've been told that many millennials are going to have to create their own jobs in the coming years and what that's going to look like. And so I want to know from the get-go, is there, like, as you're seeing and you know, what you've seen here at Focus in potential candidates come through, are you seeing that trend? Like, are there more degrees and advanced degrees coming from people? Are there a lot of like multiple degrees where they're switching careers or switching education up? I mean, what are you actually seeing come through now?
Yeah, I would agree, Lisa. We're seeing all of the above. And it's really kind of an interesting time because I think for students, they're pursuing maybe multiple degrees or perhaps they started on one path and they took a turn. So kind of the education environment is changing or how people look at work is changing. I think things are starting to change for employers too. So we have both of these dynamics going on at the same time. I think there are some organizations, their approach is still pretty traditional, but they're caught between the way they've always done it and new ways that people are looking for jobs, new expectations that people have for their jobs or from their employers. And so we're seeing these two worlds kind of converge and sometimes, quite frankly, collide. So as people are out there looking for jobs, one thing I want to say kind of right off the top is have some patience with your recruiters too, because they're learning a lot of new things as well and having to think differently about how they look and how they hire for jobs. So it's a very interesting time.
So I want to ask you, because you referenced the traditional approach, let's just talk for a minute here about the resume. Is there like validity still to the resume? I mean, it used to be, you know, you typed up your resume and you updated it and you scented it and you did all kinds of craziness and sent it out and tried to throw chocolate in there or whatever, bribes and who knows what else. Is there value still in putting a lot of effort into a resume, or are you seeing people use online applications more, or what should a young adult job seeker have in their arsenal as far as info about themselves?
Yeah, the resume is still very important. I agree that there's a lot of connecting you can do on social media. Some of that can be very informal relationship building, which I think is very important, but there will come a time in your job search that you kind of switch that phase and you actually become a candidate. Mm-hmm. When that more formal process starts, the employer is going to want to see a resume, because they are looking at that and it's telling them a lot about who you are. Your resume is your marketing piece. It's mm-hmm. your advertisement. So it's very important, and having it presentable, easy to read, free of spelling errors, some of those very traditional things still mm-hmm. play a role in it, because it is kind of the first formal look that an employer is going to take at you. So it is very, very important how you craft it. And one thing that I like to encourage people to do that are looking for jobs, resumes typically aren't one size fits all. You can kind of have your basic go-to that mm-hmm. you start from. But as you begin to apply to different organizations, go out and look at their websites, talk to people that work there, and begin to learn the language of that organization, so that when you're writing things on your resume, you're using very similar language. Now, I'm not meaning cut and paste from their website, because, you know, while we may not be the smartest people on earth, we can pick that up pretty quickly.
If every one of your acronyms is based on their website.
If they speak very formally on their website, use a little bit more formal language in your resume. If they're very casual, pick that up. You can glean a lot about the culture of the organization by looking at their website. And so if you want to present yourself as someone that's going to work well there, mm-hmm. kind of a similar, it'd be like going to a different country. You would learn some basic things in their language or learn some customs so that you don't mm-hmm. go there and offend people. So you can do the same thing in a job search with your resume.
Okay. So what, just hanging on resumes a little bit here, what you see hundreds of them, all that, I mean, probably for a single position, you can get hundreds in. What on a resume stands out to you? What's the first thing you look for? What do you, I mean, because for me, I need to not see resumes that have paragraphs and paragraphs of information. I'm like, folks, this is not an essay contest. I just need to know what you did and what you're good at, okay? That's all I'm saying. But what would you say, Jackie?
Well, I would say amen to that, Lisa. And presentation is key. Mm-hmm. So there are ways to present well, to be unique. But don't go overboard with unique. Too cutesy isn't good either. I've seen people use the curly font.
Oh, yeah.
And that's kind of like, wow, okay, not so much. But
unless you're working for Willy Wonka or something.
Yes. Yeah. That, again, there's always exception to every rule. But you are exactly right. Make it very readable. There's so many great templates out there that people can use to kind of organize your information. And again, put what are the top three things you want this employer to know about you, and make sure you put them at the top, mm-hmm. because all of the things that you hear about how quickly recruiters look at resumes, it's very true. And mm-hmm. especially recruiters that have been doing the job for a while, they know what they're looking for. And so they're scanning first to see if they can pick that up. Mm-hmm. And for people on the beginning of their job search, I'm going to say this, and it might hurt a little bit, but if you're coming out of college, and I know you've just spent thousands and thousands of dollars on a degree, and you're very proud of it, and your family's proud of it, and we're proud of you for doing that, I would still list your education a little bit further down. What happens when you put that first is a recruiter will see that, and in their mind, they're going to think no experience. Mm-hmm. And that may not be true. Mm-hmm. You may have experience following that. But when they see that first, their mind often goes to, oh, recent college grad, no experience, I'm moving on. Mm-hmm. So you can still highlight what you've done in your education. And we want to see that. It's important. But include it after kind of those key things of what you're going to bring to the organization is specifically to a position for which you might be applying.
Yeah. And this is why I would say absolutely rock the internships if you have the opportunity to show that you've been in a company, you've been in the business that you're interested in, you're a go-getter, you've put it out there. I mean, that is actual bona fide experience that I think is helpful to
It is very helpful.
Illustrate.
It's very valuable. And not only just from an experience standpoint will a recruiter say, wow, they've actually been working. But it will speak to them of all those things that you just said. We all understand when you're going to college and you're taking a full load, that's a job in and of itself. Mm-hmm. But if we see you've gone above and beyond to either do internships or volunteer, mm-hmm. if you're in organizations at your school or you're volunteering and they require a certain amount of commitment or leadership in that, those all bring value and we want to see that.
Cool. Let's move on a little bit to the interview, because I think the interview to me is super important. I mean, I certainly go through resumes. I look at where people are on paper, but I'm kind of like, if I don't think you are passionate about this position, if I do not want to do lunch with you or sit near you every day, you're gonna be hard pressed to get on my team. And so I want to talk about, you know, what, and it's funny because I was just talking to my sister about this, who was talking about a job that she interviewed for, and she's like, yeah, it didn't go really well because at one point I just burst into tears. So bless her heart. And she
We've
got very
that.
Worked up about it.
Tell her what, she's not alone.
What do you see? What are some of the best things you've seen and a couple of the worst things you've seen as far as someone who moves it into real time and real space in an interview process?
Yeah, I think it can be hard to prepare for an interview because they're done different ways. But number one, research the company and the job that you're applying for. And you can. There's a lot of information out there. You don't have to be the expert. Mm-hmm. But take a look and be able to speak intelligently about the organization and the position and how you might contribute to that. The other thing, you can underdress for an interview, but you really can't overdress. So what I mean by that is if you get there and they have a very relaxed culture and everybody's dressed casually, that's okay. The fact that you put the effort in to come looking professional, looking your best, looking like you care, that will weigh in your favor, even if after you get there, you're wearing jeans and hoodies and all of that. So err on the side of overdressing for an interview, again, because it's that first look that someone's going to see when they see you walking through the door. The other thing is I know nerves can be high. Those are kind of high stress situations. So just try to relax and don't worry if you need to take a few minutes to thoughtfully answer a question. Saying things like, that's a great question, let me think about that for a moment, if you're kind of caught off guard, or even, that's a great question, I'd like to think about it for a moment, can we come back? If they say no, say, okay, give me just a minute and then think of your answer. But don't be afraid of a couple minutes of silence. I know it feels like an eternity, but the recruiter would rather hear a thoughtful answer than something just made up off the top of your head that has nothing to do with what they're asking you about.
Yeah. What are a couple things, Jackie, that everyone should be prepared to answer? I mean, it just amazes me that people go into interviews and they're like, oh, I can't believe they asked that. And it's like, seriously, it's like in every manual for interviewing. What are the things that they just need to know?
Yeah. One, be ready to answer why you applied for that job. Mm-hmm. What are you bringing to that job that would set you apart from other candidates? And it doesn't always have to be that you've had the most experience or whatever. It could be just ready to talk about your passion for what that organization is doing. A lot of companies right now, because of the economy, there's been a lot of downsizing, whether it's nonprofit or for-profit, and they need people who can wear a lot of hats. Hmm. And typically, people who are passionate about what that organization is doing, they're going to come in ready to do whatever. So recruiters are looking for that kind of passion, for that kind of alignment in what you feel you're good at doing and what the organization needs to have done.
Okay. How important is follow-up from an interview? Whether it's a handwritten card, whether it's an email, is there a preference for one thing or the other? Is it possible to be too badgery? Should you wait or hang back? Or I feel like I'm talking about dating here. But
it's very similar, actually.
There's a lot of similarities.
There is a lot of similarities.
So what would you say best practices are in that realm?
I would say good manners never go out of style. Mm-hmm. So some kind of thank you, whether it's handwritten or an email, both are appropriate, both are appreciated, are really great to get within a day of the interview. And I would also say be careful not to be too badgery. Mm-hmm. Recruiters are seeing a lot of resumes. They're trying to get back to people. If it's been a week and a half or 2 weeks and you haven't heard anything, you know, drop an email, you know, let the recruiter know, hey, I'm still interested. I don't know if you guys have made a decision, but I'm still interested. Enjoyed our time together, and let it go. The phenomenon is the recruiter on the other side of the process has more than they can probably get done. And so mm-hmm. days are going past rapidly for them, and a week will pass and it feels like it was yesterday. You're on the other side waiting to hear. And so the time is dragging for you. And so those two are kind of out of sync with each other. So if they haven't gotten back to you in a week, that's not unusual. Give it about another couple of days to 2 weeks. They will appreciate that. They will appreciate knowing you're still interested, but they will appreciate that you haven't become their pen pal.
Okay. And then finally, just a few thoughts here on if you know, thinking of a young adult who is whether out of college or someone who's maybe wanting to transition in their career. I know, and we talk to all y'all out there about, you know, don't, Jackie alluded to it too, don't assume you're going to go in and be the CEO. Let's, you know, work our way up, people. Be willing to do, you know, what you're asked, and don't go in and say, well, anyway, let's talk about my 6 weeks of vacation. Not going to happen. But if you said from the start to the finish of the process, here are some things that I look for that I think are the top things that you could show your game with, the things that really, if you had to tell a young adult, this will up your chances of getting an interview, first of all, and getting you closer to the finish line than otherwise, what are the things that today's young adults need to know?
That is a great question. No. Can I have a moment to think about it?
Yeah.
Actually, there are a few things. I think because we're in living in a time where so many dynamics are changing, what I like to see when someone comes to the interview or when they're writing their cover letter, we didn't really talk about the cover letter, but it's very key as well.
Yeah.
It is great where you can show not only what you're going to bring to the organization, but what you think you will get from the organization. So creating that two-way street, I think it would be great to work here because of this, and I would also like to contribute because of that. That shows employers that you're coming in with a level of passion, with potentially a level of commitment to what they're doing, and that will connect with people to see it be a two-way street. I think your point, Lisa, about I guess I would say right size your expectations. Mm-hmm. Know the company that you're applying to, know how things move there, and then come in with a right kind of expectation. Because good employers will want to invest in you, help you grow and develop, but they are there to produce a product of some kind. So that's their first priority. That is number one. Show how you can contribute to that. And then your development can come through that. Be a learner. Continue what you've done so well in school. Continue to go in and be a learner. But you also have an opportunity to say, here's how I can also contribute. There's kind of like two-way mentoring going on.
Mm-hmm.
Older workers can help you navigate the professional environment, but you can come in and help them navigate some of the newer social media technologies, things like that, that aren't part of their routine. And so you can come and bring that skill set with you as well. So there's a lot of great ways for give and take. And if I were going to boil it down, I would say that is a great place to start. Talk about what you're bringing, but also how you see the benefit of working for that company.
Yeah, that's cool. Those are great thoughts. And a way to demonstrate that as well. I mean, I know, you know, here at Boundless, we work with young adults. We do a lot in the social media space. And it's always interesting to me when I have seen a candidate or even our interns in the past, all of a sudden I see them on Facebook talking up Boundless or posting about that or doing something where they're already showing their, you know, proactive nature towards Absolutely. Getting the word out and doing that.
Mm-hmm.
I know when I was in the world of PR, it was very much about, I just said three things. I want to know that you can write, I want to know that you can sell, and I want to know that you have a presence in front of people, you know, and whether or not you were a candy striper between May and August of the X year, you know, not so concerned about, but I want you to put yourself mm-hmm. forward and show what can you do moving forward. So, I think those are great guidelines for that. Reminds me of my, just one other thing I would say, whoa, I just have so many ideas. My niece just got her first real job, and her dream is to work for Disney, and she focused on Disney, learned everything about the company. Of course, she, you know, has been on the rides, let's be honest, people. But she just loves it, and she just got a job with Disney Cruise Line. She went after it. But she is in film and video. She took a job in their child care program and then offered them, how about if on the side I shoot some video for you and I volunteer my time mm-hmm. to do that? And they're like, we would love that. And so she's using it as her little foot in the door. That's savvy, people. You got to do that, okay? I'm just saying, good stuff. So yeah. Thanks.
Every job can be a good job.
Yeah.
Because you can learn something from every job that you have, no matter what. And it could be a stepping stone to the next one. So always think about what you're willing to do. There's always what you want to do, but what are you willing to do?
Exactly. And know that it can bring you into another season in the future. So
great.
Yeah. Great. Thanks, Jackie.
Letting go of every single dream. I lay each one down at your feet. Every moment of my wandering never changes what you see. I've tried to win this war, I confess. My hands are weary, I need your rest. Mighty warrior, king of the fight. No matter what I face, you're by me.
We are opening up this week's inbox, and we're very privileged to have back with us Carl Benzio. He is a psychiatrist with our Physicians Resource Council here at Focus on the Family that provides a lot of oversight for decisions that we make in the medical sphere and beyond. And so, Carl, welcome.
Hey, great to be here with you.
Great to have you. All right, here's the question. I am a 22-year-old girl looking for a place to live within my budget. I found one place in a great location and good rent. The people even seem normal, except that they ask their renter to be 420 friendly. As a Christian, I don't know how to begin thinking about choosing to live with these people. Are there any guidelines?
Well, 420 friendly means being marijuana friendly with the marijuana culture. And this is just a very common issue that people have in evaluating what's their engagement going to be when somebody has wrong or inappropriate behavior. And first, just for this situation, you know, money is not the key ingredient. You know, we can't look at material things to drive our decision-making process, that there's things that are way more important than just a financial aspect in the decision-making process and being able to really trust God to provide for our needs. Second is we just really don't want to let our emotions become our decision maker. Emotions are a great warning system, but they're a terrible decision making system. They don't let doctors operate on their own kids because we'd be too emotionally involved. And so worrying about what her finances are or what the other people are going to think about, you know, if she's going to be a fuddy-duddy about marijuana or not, we can't let those emotions weigh in on the decision making process. Trying to evaluate, you know, those people involved, obviously with marijuana use or some kind of activity like that, you know, there's a lot of consequential behavior that goes with that. So whether there's illegal activity, whether it's just late night activity, disruptive behavior, depression, anxiety, even psychoses are part of that marijuana use, as well as some other different aberrant behavior. So trying to figure out, do I really want to engage, you know, with those kind of activities? That's going to be healthy for me and my life management principles. And then be able to ask them back, you know, if they're asking you, are you going to be 420 friendly? Well, are you going to, asking them back, are you going to be people friendly? Mm-hmm. So as far as boundaries as a roommate or a housemate, you know, what's the courtesies that they're going to provide you? Are they going to make fun of you if you don't partake in their activity? Are they going to be respectful of your property? Of, you know, when they get the munchies, are they going to be eating all your food, you know, in the refrigerator? Are mm-hmm. they going to clean up after themselves after they have all their friends over and hanging out? So being able to just regular relationship screening mm-hmm. kind of process to see, you know, where are they in a good reciprocal relationship, not just a one-sided, hey, you have to give into all the things we want, but we're not going to give into the things that you want. In relationships, I just have two criteria. Am I influencing them positively, and are they influencing me positively? If it's yes, then I stay in the relationship. Mm-hmm. If it's no, I get out of the relationship. Hmm. I don't try to blame them or blame me. I just use that criteria. I want to be an influencer, and I don't want to be negatively influenced. So looking at, you know, what do you think is going to happen in this situation? As far as knowing yourself and understanding, well, what kind of personality do I have? Mm-hmm. Am I somebody who's easily influenced? Am I somebody who is too trusting of others? Am I somebody who's a follower and not a leader? Or am I just at a vulnerable time of my life right now where the ability to avoid these kind of temptations, you get trapped in some of this cycle of their negative behavior or sinful behavior, just might be too hard for me to resist. Maybe I just started a new job, or I'm separated from my family and out living in a new state or something like that. And there's just a lot of vulnerability to fall into Satan's traps in these kind of situations. So to be able to guard your mind, guard your heart, and to be able to avoid those kind of things would probably be the more prudent aspect. As we answer anybody back, you know, we need to know that we're all sinners. Mm-hmm. We all struggle. We all have areas that we make mistakes. So how to be able to treat that other person, even though they make this request of you, in a gracious way, in a loving way, and show them God's love and compassion. And then whenever somebody's asking you to do something that's wrong, to be able to think, well, what kind of witness am I mm-hmm. to other people who are watching? So I might know that this marijuana use is wrong, and I'm not going to partake of it, but if my niece or if my nephew or my younger sibling maybe sees me in this house with these people that are partaking of this activity, maybe that's going to adversely influence them or cause them to think that, well, maybe this is right because Aunt, you know, or Uncle Carl is doing this mm-hmm. with these people, so it must be okay. Mm-hmm. And they might start getting the wrong idea of what's biblical and what's God's intention for us and life management principles versus what's the world trying to teach us. Mm-hmm. So those would be the things that I would put out there to discern in a difficult situation.
Yeah, good thoughts. And I like what you said about just, you know, do you project yourself in this situation? Do you want to be in this situation? I mean, it's one thing, and of course, Colorado, where I am, is now marijuana has been legalized. Are we talking about a large, like, apartment complex here where there will be, like, single units where people are smoking pot? Or are you talking about, like you alluded to, sharing a flat, sharing an apartment with someone where you're walking into your door and people are there smoking weed? I mean, that's like,
yeah.
Do you really want that to be your experience?
It's in the lion's den.
And again, yeah, I mean, and where are you in that? How easily influenced are you? So thanks so much for weighing in. Good thoughts.
Well, thanks, Lisa.
All right, folks, that is it for this week's show. Please do write to us at editor@boundless.org so we can answer your question in the future. You can also hop over and find us on Facebook or on Twitter or on Instagram. One thing that we would love for you to do is to go to boundless.org/love and tweet that you like us. We're kind of doing a little Twitter campaign to let folks know who we are via our own fans. And so boundless.org/love, and you can go ahead and post a tweet there. So that's it for this week's show. I'm your host, Lisa Anderson, for The Boundless Show.
The Boundless Show is a production of Boundless.org. Focus on the family.